Hi, welcome to another episode of the Beyond Blocks podcast, a podcast about Drupal, PHP, open source, and related software development topics. I'm Oliver Davis. Today I'm here with my guest, Ev from Systemseed. Hi, Ev, how are you?
Hi, Oliver. Yeah, I'm doing very well, thanks. I suppose I should begin with a self-introduction.
Sure, go for it.
So, like you said, I'm a CTO at a small boutique agency called Systemseed. I'm over 15 years in the industry, probably closer to 20, quite a lot of years. Scary number. I'm a big Drupal fan and enthusiast. Also, proud father of the two beautiful kids and the big barbecue lover. So,
Awesome
thanks for
stuff.
having me.
No, you're welcome. It's good to have you on the show. And yeah, we met at Drupal Camp England in Cambridge, which was a month or so ago now. Time flies, but yeah, it was good to meet you there. What were your thoughts on the conference?
I think it was absolutely amazing camp run by British Drupal Association. I think it was the first time after a big break.
Yeah.
So it was a very phenomenal comeback. Definitely enjoyed
Yeah,
the lineup. I enjoyed the venue. It was Cambridge University, like one of the best venues I've ever spoken at, if not the best one. And great lineup, a lot of enthusiasm, and as always, Drupal community, just come there and enjoy the people. So
it was
big
great in.
kudos to the organizers team.
Indeed, I'm hoping to get some of the organizers on for an episode as well. Need to follow up with them about that. I'll put that on my to-do list or on
Oh
my to-do list.
yeah, you should.
Should be great because yeah, we used
Yeah.
to have Drupal Camp London was like the main one in the UK, and then the last one I remember being at was just before COVID because I was doing automated testing TDD workshop. So I was in London for the Friday where we had the workshops. And then actually I was at the office first. I was giving a talk remotely for a user group. Then I was doing the training. And then, yeah, I think lockdowns had been sort of announced, but they were starting like the week after or something. They're right on the verge of COVID. So it's been a while since we had like a sort of, I don't want to say it's necessarily a successor to that because I don't know whether that's completely wrapped up, but it was good to have another one. And yeah, organized by a few people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I find it was a massive success. Like, seriously, great comeback.
Hopefully, I don't know if, I don't know, I'll have to find out what the plans are for another one, but hopefully they are going to do one next year, hopefully, because I think that one was a good big success.
For sure.
The party or the sort of after conference drinks, it was a bit loud and a bit busy in there trying to fit however many developers and Drupal people into a small sort of room. But yeah, that's usually a problem wherever you go, I guess.
When you said it, I realized that it probably was one of the loudest parties I've ever been to. It was very packed and it was really loud.
Was
But I
loud.
mean, again, Drupal community makes it all eventually, so it was very lovely to meet those
It was. But yeah,
lovely folks.
the day seemed to just go past so quickly for me. And then, yeah, it was quite loud in there as well. So there were people there who, Emma, who's been on the podcast before, I saw her talk about UX and Drupalisms. But yeah, it's just, I'll have to say hello to Emma. But the day just went so fast and it was just so, it was quite loud and quite a big queue for the bar, if I remember rightly as well. But
In the
still,
beginning,
still great. Yeah,
then
at the beginning. So. Yeah, it's good to
it
see. Hopefully, another one next year. Fingers crossed. We'll see.
was arrived.
So yeah, I saw also your talk on engineering culture and thought it'd be good for us to have a discussion. I've seen remember you saying that there's a big topic and probably more than you could cover in half an hour. So let's see.
Oh,
Let's
definitely.
take
This
some
is a
more time.
never-ending topic. Even trying to compress it into a 30-minute presentation was a quite a big deal. And so I hope that we will cover at least some of the interesting aspects of it. And thanks for coming for my talk, by the way. It was very nice seeing you there.
It's good to go to sit with some other, I don't, system seeders is a word, but I'm making it a word, but yeah, some others were there as well, so it was good to, because and yeah, the format of your talk was very interesting, because it was quite an interactive session as well, where you're asking questions of the audience and polling the results in real time and displaying them on the screen. So I thought that was a very interesting approach.
That is the most risky part of the whole presentation, where you bring in some tech. Usually, what happens to live demos or any live technology demonstrations during the talk, the 50% chance that it will not go right. And surprisingly, or actually not surprisingly, on the morning of the conference, this polling app that I created for the presentation didn't work. Of course, I was
Of course.
panicked. Me and Leo, my colleague, we were trying to fix it, but we managed to do this. So hopefully, well,
Fantastic.
it's likely that during the presentation it was working fine. But yeah,
Yeah, I
I
think you
found
had
a
to.
cheeky, sneaky way to poll the people while I'm doing the presentation.
Yeah, as long as you remember to reset the counts between questions. So I think there was one time you didn't reset it, or and somebody shouted out and said reset. And that was quite funny, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I was trying to make sense of the numbers because the numbers didn't match the numbers of people who voted didn't match the amount of people who actually present in the audience, and I was like, what is going on? So thankfully there was someone in the audience who helped me to remind myself to reset the
Indeed.
counter, and so then it worked out fine.
Yeah, I have mixed opinions on live demos. Usually, if I'm giving presentations, it's usually some slides maybe for the first half, and then some demos or something at the second half. And yeah, I've seen a lot of really good sessions that are primarily live coding or live demos. And I feel like, but I've also seen ones that aren't as good, because I feel like there's the pressure then of if you are stood in front of people and something doesn't work. You've got the pressure then of trying to debug the thing in front of people, and you're getting stressed, and the audience is sat there waiting, and it can be awkward. But when it works, I think it connects with people more than just PowerPoint or slide or PDF slides or something. So I think when it works well, it works really well, but it's a risk, of course.
It is a huge risk. Just imagine standing in front of the crowd, your app is just broken, have no idea how to fix it, and then the audience is silent. The time is on. It's a lot of stress and pressure. So my recommendation to anybody who aims to do the live demos, probably don't, probably record what you're trying to show and do the live, just play the video basically, unless you're absolutely sure that you will be able to debug in front of the audience and you'll be fine with that. So it's a lot of pressure, very hard job.
I've seen talks where people have been pressing keys on the keyboard, but it's actually a video recording. But you don't realize it's a video recording until at a point. But yeah, usually I have a video as a backup, or I have tags or something, like a working version I can check out if something isn't working. So usually I've got some sort of backup plan.
Yeah, I think having a backup plan, like a video recording of what you're going to demo, is a very good idea.
Yeah, couldn't maybe yeah you couldn't have done that in your talk though, because it was all done in real time, and then you'd be doing the results. But
Yes,
yeah,
it's live polling people, so it
live
can't be
polling,
recorded.
no, but it was good, and I think it was. So yeah, for
Thank you.
anybody who obviously hasn't seen it, and I'll put the link to the video in the episode notes. That yeah, there was a series of questions that you asked of the audience around A or B options, and then yeah, so on different aspects of engineering culture, and we sort of discussed them on a per sort of question basis, and also then sort of maybe how systems team were doing things. So I thought it was a really good format.
Yeah, thanks. And I really appreciate the engagement from the audience. According to the numbers that I had in the app and the numbers of people I saw in the audience, I think pretty much everyone, more or less, was in this app giving the feedback, like live feedback around the topic. So it was very, very welcomed from my side as well. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, it was all anonymous and everything. It
It's
was
all
yeah,
anonymous. There's absolutely
everybody
nothing
could,
anywhere. But
yeah,
some of the
everyone
results
could.
were pretty shocking. especially when it came down to transparency in the teams, when it came down to reusable software. I didn't expect that. That things are not looking as good as I would hope.
Indeed. I was, there were a couple of things I remember seeing, but oh, that was an interesting outcome for that question. wasn't expecting. But if we zoom back a little bit, so how do you define engineering culture? Like what does engineering culture mean to you?
That's a very good question. I think it's important to be on the same page in terms of the meaning of this term. The way I define it for myself is I see it as a set of processes, practices, and sort of people mindset that the team follows within an organization. And what's important that they have willingly follow those practices and they expect others to follow them too. I like to compare the engineering culture to any national culture. For example, when you travel, when you go to another company, I can use, for example, Spain or Barcelona as an example, as this is the last country I've been to. Basically, when you go to Barcelona, you see people jogging, people riding on the bikes, people swimming, people playing paddle all the way. And the whole their culture is built around sports. And if you move into this culture, you would very quickly find yourself playing, probably paddle or doing something with your friends too, very quickly, even though you've not done this before. So similarly, it happens when you join a company. You accept the norms and practices are that are standardized and applied within this organization. Do you want to add anything to this?
No, I think it's a very interesting thing. Yeah, and I've been through that situation, obviously moving between companies and projects and things. Everything is set up differently, and there's definitely some technical aspects to it, such as how you're doing things like your Git branching and everything else. But there are cultural things around that, like if you are doing code review and doing pull requests and merge requests, like how that is done. It's more of a cultural thing, it's not a technical thing in terms of making a new branch and pushing it, but how feedback is given and how feedback is received, for example. It's just, maybe just
Oh,
one part
indeed.
of engineering culture.
Indeed, code reviews takes a special place in the heart of every engineer, I'm sure. It's like we can talk about this all day long. I've seen companies, was from my personal experience, like imagine working on a task, putting all your effort and a part of your soul into something, into writing a bit of code, adding a couple of cherries on top of this pie, trying to do the best job possible, and then you submit your PR. It's being silently accepted and merged. And so you're like, eh, was it good? Was it bad? Has it barely passed the QA? Or what's the feedback? You feel like your work is not valued when there is silent feedback like that.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I've probably seen both sides of that argument, I think. And if I'm being like a reviewer on something, it's trying to give feedback in a good way that you're sort of trying to help people improve and get better. But yeah, as a reviewee, I think then it's you are invested in the code that you write, and like you said, it does become sort of part, as much as you can say people aren't their code. Like if you've spent a lot of time working on things and somebody says no, this is wrong or something, then people are going to be sort of affected by that, well, potentially.
Yes, I'm pretty sure a lot of developers take it as a personal offense, to be honest, because this is the result of their work. The way we found the best way we found to give feedback during the code reviews is to structure it in the educational format. So if you're giving a feedback, add reference to a documentation that describes behavior that wasn't implemented, for example, or explain what should be improved and why. In this case, the person that is receiving the feedback would be able to learn something from the PR given. It's very easy to get into this blaming culture. Oh, this is wrong, this is bad, this is like should have been redone. Or even like a senior engineer, what are you doing here? Those sort of feedbacks, as opposed to helping someone to learn. through the code reviews. I think this is the creates a very good feeling of a comfort zone for developers within the team, that they are not afraid to make a mistake and be blamed for that. I mean, even the way I say it feels quite horrible, being blamed for making a coding mistake. And if you go the other way around, you just try to teach people what they are not doing right, what they can improve. There's always something to improve for absolutely anyone. There's no person that knows everything. So I feel like this mentorship culture and appreciation of the work done by the people is quite at the core of engineering culture.
Indeed. And I think that's it's the same with working for a company or a project, but also the same with open source as well. If you want to contribute to something like Drupal or any open source project, like how you contribute to that and how the contributors or the maintainers are going to review your code and reply provide feedback on it. Because yeah, if it's going to be a bad experience, people aren't going to contribute to it.
No, they will not. They will just try once or twice, and then they'll be blamed for
Yeah.
the mistakes made. And then people are like, okay, fine, bye. I'll find more welcoming community. I'll definitely not going to invest more time into something that I don't find where I don't find good at. And the same
Yeah.
happens with the companies. But usually, these sort of stress tends to accumulate because it's a job. Usually, people spend more time, even like forcing themselves, trying to get through code reviews, even if they sound and look harsh, unfortunately. Anyway,
Yeah.
code reviews,
Yeah.
it's
I
very, very
find.
personal for engineers.
Indeed. Yeah. And I find it's trying to find that line sometimes between if someone submits a patch or something. Like, yes, I feel like that. I guess for someone's like, that's not the way I'd have done it, but that's not, doesn't mean like everything's got to be the way I would do things. But yeah, maybe if something is done in a certain way that's not necessarily the best way. But it works. Does that mean, the thing I've been looking at before is ship show ask. So it's like, are you a shipping team, as in you're just committing and pushing, or are you showing, or are you asking for feedback on things? So usually it's sort of somewhere on that scale. But yeah,
Yeah.
how to give feedback in a good way, but also like, yeah, what's good enough and what needs to be sort of said, no, we're gonna get rid of that and start again.
Yeah, it is an art of, to give a feedback. It's its own discipline, I would say, that has to
Yeah,
be
definitely.
facilitated within the company. Because you're absolutely right. When is the code that, for example, is not perfect but is sufficient, as long as it doesn't contain security vulnerabilities and is generally fine. Do you want to let it go, let it slip through and go to production, or do you want to be like a perfectionist? It's quite often business cares about getting the job done with no, ideally with no technical debt or as less as possible, with no definitely security issues or things that affect performance or stability. As long as those key metrics are there, I mean, the rest is pretty subjective.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I found when I've been working on sort of truly agile teams is that some things have been 90, 95% done, but that little thing needs tweaking. But it's good enough to ship and we'll deploy
Yeah.
it and then we'll, fix that little thing or we'll cover that use case in the next release. So, yeah, that's it, again, that all comes down to culture, right? That's like what's good, what's de what can we deploy, and when do we want to, yeah, when do we want to push things back?
Sure. I guess it also comes down to personal growth of developers within the team. Like, if you hire juniors, mid-level engineers, how do you expect them to grow if all the feedback that is given in the company is like, this is wrong, like, redo this? Like, it's a very blunt and harsh way. There's no way people would learn and improve. I think
Yeah,
this
it's like
is a
building that.
human-level growth attitude.
Yeah, it's building that sort of safe space and that safe environment for people to learn or to fail, but to fail in a good way with the learning
Yeah, soft
side.
fail, a bit like you do with the kids. You let them fail, but softly. They get to
That's a good way of
learn.
putting it.
They got to learn. They got to have failure experience, but as long as you're as a parent or as a mentor within the company, can catch the issues before they go live and turn it into an educational learning experience for them, everybody will be winning.
Indeed. Yeah. I think one of the things you said in that talk was about identifying areas of improvement. So, that's not to say that things are always, wrong, but there's identifying ways to make things better and improve on them.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to making things a little bit better than they were before. Sometimes you can do a big push and big improvement, but as long as you make little, even small steps, they tend to accumulate, and time flies very quickly. A year of small steps is much better than a year of no steps. The
Indeed.
difference is huge, and people probably sometimes undervalue the importance of very small steps.
So how much you talk about a few things, other things where you talk about things like growth mindset and failing, soft fails. How much of that is when you're hiring the potentially hiring people to look for that at the beginning and to identify potential things there versus getting people in and then trying to, I was going to say, force a culture on people, but trying to adapt them to that. How much of it is, does it need to be already there? If you understand, maybe I'm trying to say.
It's a very good question. I think if I step back, it begins at the recruitment phase. It try to find people who match the company culture as much as it can possibly be tested during the recruitment and shares the company values. For example, we are a fairly small team. We are like probably up to 15 people. And we work in social impact space. So when we recruit, we try to see if people have any interest in social impact, in doing something good in the world beyond just, making money generally. So if they have done any volunteering, do they fundraise for someone? Do they have they got any evidence of social impact activities in the past? Because if they do, and this is probably the thing with a lot of other companies who have their own values and they believe in them, when people share the same values, they will find a lot of similarities in other aspects of their work and life. So the work will become just easier by design, if you want.
Yeah, because everybody's sort of pulling in the same direction, almost
Yeah.
there.
Exactly. They share the same cultural code, I would say. The same
Yeah.
values, whatever those values for a certain company are. That's
Yeah,
the
I suppose. I suppose it depends on how much of a priority that is for people. So I don't obviously don't, I don't know how it works from your side, but I know when I've applied for roles previously and maybe had an interview and then maybe done some sort of technical test, and maybe then the feedback that I get at the end is, yeah, you're not a good cultural fit for us. And it, to me, that's always felt like a bit of a bit of an excuse or a bit of a cop for some other, maybe for some other reason. I can maybe look and go, so I do contribute to open source. I give presentations at events as well. It's a lot of these things you'd assume people would be looking for. Then have somebody sort of turn around and say, hey, we don't think you're a good culture fit. Is not always sound like the best option, the best answer for me. What's, again,
Yeah.
feedback, something a bit more constructive.
Yeah, I'm sure it m must have been something else because with your all the credits in the open source and Drupal community, I mean, it's very hard to find somebody more. I'm trying to find the right words for you, not to praise you too much, but to give you good credit back. But basically, more credited and more professional in the community. So it must be something else, I suppose. And people, I find it not very professional from the companies when they hire and they decline the re when they reject the application, the person. when the honest feedback is not provided, again, it's lacking an opportunity for people to learn what have they done wrong, what can they improve.
Indeed. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, like I said, I think it felt like, this was a number of years ago, by the way, but it was, yeah, it just felt like, the culture then sort of seemed like, a bit of a get out, cause for want of a better phrase. But yeah, I feel like, that sort of gives you an idea into the culture of the company potentially anyway, and it sounds like when it's done well, to give people that area to grow and to learn, it's an asset for the company then.
Sure, maybe you were very lucky with not getting into the company with the wrong culture.
True. Yeah, what's the saying? Yeah, all things happen for a reason or something like that. Yeah, if we would have gone there, it might not have worked out anyway. So,
Yeah,
yes.
sure. But
So, how about.
getting back to the question about bringing new people into the company and them absorbing the culture, I think it's also one of the key experience. Is the right onboarding practices and onboarding processes. What we do, for example, at System Seed, we, for any new hire, we dedicate to them sort of onboarding buddy who would walk them through all of the steps of running a new project. They would create a sandbox project. They would deploy a new development environment. They would write a first test together. They would do a full cycle of story release from development to QA to release to merge and all this stuff. People are giving sufficient and quite excessive training beforehand before they're exposed to real work. And I find that, again, it's about building a safe space, isn't it? Like you join a company, you try to build a context. What's going on in the company? How they do things? What's the practices? And when you have someone to talk to, not being just thrown into the battle right off the bat, but being properly trained, it helps to build confidence. And the first experience is quite important. It's like when you walk into a room full of people that you don't know. A lot of people, of course, feel quite stressed and nervous, especially in the engineering space, right? And how welcoming that community, group of people will decide the first impression, which is the key impression that people can make about the companies. And then they decide whether they want to stay or run away screaming.
Yeah, I've definitely had that happen where I've joined, I guess that, yeah, it's different potentially. I think whether you're essentially like a freelancer or a contractor, because then there's like, yeah, expected to sort of hit the ground running. But if you're, yeah, going in as like a permanent or a staff member, then yeah, having that extra time to get everybody, settled and onboarded, I think is crucial. And yeah, I've had experience where I've joined places and they're like, yeah, we need you in London tomorrow for a workshop or something. And I was like, I've no chance to get in, or I've been wanted to pick up a laptop and then I was off, or yeah, you're straight onto a project. And maybe people just assume that, yeah, if you're like a senior developer or something, then yeah, maybe you can do that. But every project, I think, has got different things, like, or maybe like different companies, like the way they could figure, are these like a different ticketing system, or if they use the same ticketing system, no two ones are set up the same. And yeah, it can be quite different to adjust to how it's done in that, or just, yeah, project I'm working on recently. I would do something one way, and I'd maybe sort of move it into like a needs testing column. But they, yeah, wanted us to sort of move it and reassign it, and they would sort of pull tickets into the column rather than push them in. So yeah, again, it's just the workflows and things are different everywhere. So
Exactly.
having that time, I think, is quite crucial to get people
Yeah,
started.
exactly. There are so many details that from the outside, some of the stakeholders may not realize how important those details are. Like how you name the branches, how this is connected to your PM system, how you create pull requests, where you create, when you create. how you deploy, how you merge, how you test. There are, like, I can easily name like 100 things that can be different in different companies, but from the outside it would look like they do the same job and do the same follow the same process. So just to give you an example how we try to mitigate that, for instance, when we get lead engineers, I personally spend with them every week or two, in addition to that onboarding buddy, just talking about everything within the company. Like, what's the history? How did we came up with this tool? What was our experience beforehand? Why does it even exist in the company? What have we tried? Why we deploy 5 times a day? Why don't we deploy at the end of the sprint? How many other companies do, for example? So I help to build a context. And building context, it empowers, first of all, the culture of transparency. And what's important is that those people who got the context, they can drive change within the company because they know why things are they are right now. Whereas I'm sure you can take an example. For example, when you join a company, they've got a large project which has like 5, 10 years of code in it. And if you were to make a change, you're trying to make the minimal change possible to deliver your task so that you don't break something occasionally because you don't know what's going on with the rest of the project, what's going to be the implications of making a change. It's a very similar within the culture. Within the tool set and process being in place for the business is incredibly important to let people build the context, especially if they're lead devs, if they're supposed to be driving the teams. So they're supposed to have a freedom and comfort to make changes. Otherwise, you will stuck in the old processes and old tools forever.
I'm sure you've all done it, but I've looked at code and tried and gone, why have they done it like this? Like, why was it done this way? And as much as you try and put yourself back in somebody's situation when they wrote it, maybe the requirements were not quite, right, or maybe there was something has changed and it's now and then, or there's no why that code's been written that way. And usually when I go and look at the commit logs, the commit messages aren't great in general. And again, it's by capturing that context and why it's been done this way versus, not a different way, or keeping documentation in like ADRs or something. I think it's just, why capturing the why is so crucial, I think.
I absolutely agree. I believe it's very important to have a transparency and open up those why conversations within the team. Like, why have you done this this way? Why have you chosen this tool? And be able to explain the history behind decisions, how you came up with certain approaches, practices, or even wrong practices. It's all history. Sometimes you make decisions because you have to cut the corner, and from the person who have j just joined the company, they don't know that. They might believe that, well, what are we doing here? They've made such a bad decisions because they don't have a context. When there is a context, it makes so much things so much clearer, so much understandable.
That's something else I remember you said in the talk about, but there's no right or wrong culture. There's just the reflection of where things are now and how you got there. So the decisions might have been bad or poor so far, but that's not doesn't mean you can't change or go for, or improve going forward.
Yeah, it is the first step, awareness, being aware and be able to understand what you do as a company right now and what can be improved. Because when you don't know what can be improved, you kind of may think like, well, maybe we're good, maybe we're fine, maybe everybody else does the same stuff in their own companies, and everybody's suffering from harsh PRs, for example, and reviews. Maybe everybody else is, I'm trying to make some good example of bad cultural approach. Maybe everybody else just throw contractors into the battle because this is why they exist. But I don't find this is the right culture. Even contractors spend sufficient time systems learning our tools and processes and practices before they are shown to the clients. I find it so being nice to people, helping them to build a comfort zone is important. It is always rewarded and appreciated.
Yeah, I've worked on teams with contractors before, and obviously I did contracting work as well myself, but I also have the problem to be different with that is that you will come in, do a task, or a task, and yeah, when the contract is finished, then that knowledge goes with me then, or with the contractor then, and it doesn't always actually stay in house again, or part of the project, it may not be documented. Ideally, you want to keep as much of that knowledge in house as you can, or at least make sure it's shared before, contractor does finish.
Yeah, knowledge sharing is actually another key area of engineering culture. And when I was preparing for my talk in Cambridge, I polled my engineering team about what they find was the most valuable aspect that they personally value about our culture. And the number one was knowledge sharing. Many described this as a game changer and something that they had rarely or never experienced in previous companies. Because knowledge sharing on a regular basis allows to see the unseen, discover the issues that you have not even thought about, solve the problems together, create this culture of collaboration again, and openness and transparency. What we do, for instance, at SystemSeed, apart from the calls on a regular basis within the engineering teams, when you run multiple projects, for example, we have every 2 weeks calls where all engineers join and they share their achievements, they share their problems, so that we're capable of finding the solutions that have been applied, for example, to other projects that have not been applied to others yet. And you wouldn't know that similar teams have similar problems until you just talk to each other. And then you may, what we always find out is that people have similar problems. And without this, without aligning them, they will solve them differently. And it creates more of
Just
a
the
problem,
inconsistencies, I guess, isn't it really?
inconsistencies, which creates problems for the business eventually. It's when people join, change the engineering, the teams they work in, you gotta get used to the new tooling. But why would you want to get used to the new tooling if you could have solved it the same way that the other team has solved it? And you can contribute it to your own sort of boilerplate that can be applied to all projects, to the existing clients, to the new clients. And it would be great for the business because new projects will start not from the clean slate, but from quite a sophisticated foundation. It will create better efficiency for delivery in all the teams because they can collaborate and can reuse solutions, take solutions from each other. It will reduce the mistakes made because if somebody hit a bug, they would know that other teams on other projects would likely to experience the same issue because they run on the same everything, basically, same software, same tools, same whatever else is there, like same laptop, even same operating system. You know, how many times we had issues, for example, with upgrading to the next version of macOS, and then, oh, Docker doesn't work on this version of macOS. Please, guys, do not upgrade until they fix this stuff. You know, it just helps in your daily routine, and you know that your input will be valuable for the rest of the team because they will definitely share the same problems. And again, solutioning together, more fun, more interesting. Get the outer perspective, what other teams are doing, what are the problems they're solving, what are the games they're winning.
Yeah, I've definitely seen situations where multiple projects have the same or very similar requirements and they've been solved in completely different ways. So maybe that's using a different contrib module or one has then written a custom version of the same thing. That just becomes difficult to maintain over time, especially if you've got developers moving between projects and it's just done differently on both, or maybe one project's using Vue, one's using React or something. Just those sort of inconsistencies just make things more difficult.
It is, and especially it makes it more difficult for the business because then when you gotta find new developers to support a new project, you'd realize that there is a whole new zoo of technologies on that project. one is using Vue, but your team is experienced in React, then you got to find a Vue developer where you would be able to apply that person only for one Vue-related project. She's like, if you would be more standardized, then you would be able to keep that person for longer. You'd be able to invest into that person to train them, and then keep in the team. Again, business-wise, standardization and knowledge sharing makes a lot of sense. But also, developers enjoy it a lot as well, as they can do things more efficiently.
Yeah, some of my favorite things, thinking back to one agency I worked at, we'd have communities of practice sessions. So we were split across different offices anyway. So we had a few of us working remotely, and we had office in London and some others around the UK. So it was a nice chance to get together with everybody on like on a Zoom call or Teams call or whatever, and give sort of updates on not necessarily on the projects, but we'd have like a front end community of practice. We'd have a Drupal one. We'd have, because we did multiple things there. So yeah, that was good to sort of show a bit about, you know, maybe there is like, oh yeah, there's this cool module I found, and then you could be, oh yeah, we used that on this other project, or you learn from it. And it's a good chance to people to share stuff. So you know, I've done did ones on automated testing and TDD and test driven development, and then I did another one on Tailwind CSS. You know, and I think it's just yeah, it's called like what, brown bag lunches and lunch and learns, and you know, we used to do coding club or coding dojo like on a Friday. Like we would just stop, not work on any project work, but build a little game or do like code cutters or something like. And it for me, I had to be with a group that was doing mostly front end stuff, so that's how I learned a lot about TypeScript, was by being in that environment and essentially in like a mob session, which was really good. And you know, I'm used to writing PHP, so you'd put like the word string and then the variable name afterwards was in TypeScript the other way. It was just, yeah, a good experience to learn new things, and again, like in a safe environment with people who, you know, who know, you know, people you can learn from.
Absolutely. I think a lot of developers naturally tend to isolate themselves in a bubble around their own team that they work with. But in the long run, it creates this feeling of isolation and lack of growth because you're not looking at anything else beyond your own project, which again creates longer term issues for both person that is not growing as well as for the business, where people are not growing or not learning from each other's experience, even though your other teams are at the arm's length. It's literally not very hard to implement within the companies, as long as there's the right process and the right practice in place.
Indeed, yeah, that's something I try and do, just sort of show people how I would like things to be done. So sort of like lead by example. So today I was posting screenshots of, I've been, you know, working on some code today, and then I'll post some screenshots of that in a group chat with the other developers, and just to be like, yeah, this is how this works, and then hopefully they'll sort of look at that and learn from it. So yeah, small little change, but it, you know, little, you never know what's going to click with people either. I might think it's something small. Someone said the other day, maybe it was on my on the last podcast, or one of the other episodes, someone said about, oh, I didn't know you could do git commit with without dash m or something, like something small. I thought, oh, you know, everybody knows that, but you just don't know, you know, what's going to click with everybody. And again, yeah, that's what I pair a mob programming, because you can be working on something and someone goes, wait a minute, what button did you just press? What did you just do? And those little things can be interesting as the big things when trying to teach like domain-driven design or something.
Yeah, I read about this somewhere. Professionals with a lot of years in the industry, being recognized experts, they have a tendency of not realizing the gaps that other people may have. They assume like, if I'm using something for the past 15 years, of course everybody else know about it already. But the truth is, nobody, they don't. I even tend to learn from our more junior team members that have grown in system seed. I would have never thought that I would learn something new from more junior team members, but I do. When I look at how they work, when we do some kind of pair programming sessions, I realize that they know some interesting hotkeys, or they use one interesting tool or service to help them to deliver the work faster. So, yeah, this culture of leading by example and sharing how you work, looking at how others work, is very beneficial for team bonding and the learning culture as well. And also, you hit also, I think there was a spot on in terms of leading by example, as this is one other aspect, a very important aspect of culture, engineering culture, but as well, also generally culture within the team. Leading by example is the only right way to lead and drive the team forward. I'm sure all of us have had situations where our line managers or leads in the past were telling us something that you know that they were not even going to follow. Something like, you're gonna do this, but I'm not on this. In this game, it's for you, it's not for me. So you do this, and I will do what is best for myself. I find that it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah,
Either.
it's like do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. And people read it very quickly. And the culture in such companies is usually, you tell me what I'm gonna do. I may follow it, maybe not. There's a lot of clashes, I think, between the staff and the more senior management if they don't lead by example. You're either with me on the boat or you're outside of the boat. There's no other way around it.
Sounds like a good idea. Yeah. So you mentioned about transparency earlier on as well, and in the talk to talk a bit about transparency and why you think that's so important for engineering culture.
Yeah, transparency is again a very crucial element of the culture generally. Getting back to the poll I had with my team members, it was the second most valued aspect mentioned by them. What I mean when I say transparency, firstly, it comes down to communication with the clients, being close to the stakeholders, being able to hear the impact of your work, basically. When I've seen so many examples where when developers were isolated and very much distanciated from even product owners or stakeholders, treating them more like someone who can get the task done, and then nobody cares about the output, nobody cares about the result. The task is done, checkbox tick. And then you move on. You don't care about the outcome. When you have an opportunity to see the result of your work, to ask the direct questions, to understand what you're doing and why and for whom, again, it's a game changer. I can give you an example from my personal experience. From time to time, our delivery team flies to the clients, to see them in person, to run the workshops. And a couple of years ago, one of my developers who led a very large social impact charity project for a couple of years went flew to Ireland to meet the clients. They were running this workshop. It was supposed to be the next big milestone of the development. And she came back from the workshop. She was crying. She was in tears. She's like, they're such lovely people. They trust us so much. They believe in their cause. I do believe in what they do as well. We have no way of letting them down. It was a very emotional moment. You cannot create this connection when you're keeping the developers away from the impact of their work. And of course, that project was a big success. It is still running very successfully. This is one of our biggest clients. So this transparency creates personal connections
Yeah,
and
because then
feeling of
your developer is
me.
invested in that project then, because now they understand why they're doing it and the impact that that's having.
Yep.
And I'd imagine more so in like the charity sort of sector, you can ship it, you can re-identify with that instead of just a generic client agency, and then they're saying, well, we want to make our banner green today instead of blue or something, and you're just like, either you don't know why you need to do it, or you're just doing it sort of for the sake of it. If they can give you, if you can get into a situation where you really believe in it, and I know that I'm doing something, or somebody's doing something that's going to have a positive impact on that, then yeah, I'd imagine the project's going to go better.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you ask some developers, what have you done last month? Some of them may tell you, well, I completed 10 stories. Another one can say, well, last month I have improved the conversion rate on the donation form, which, according to the analytics that was shown to us by the data analysis, that was shown to us by data, how do you call
Analysis.
it?
Analysis?
The person, data analyst.
Analytic. Analytics. It's a guessing game.
Okay. Right. That was basically backed up by the data that stakeholders has shown us that it was improved by 30%. That's what I've done last month, not 10 tasks, you know? It is a
Indeed.
key difference again to how you feel about the results of your work. And if it feels good, you will continue in this way. If it feels like 10 tasks, you can make 10 tasks in any other company, you know, if you want to. It's just 10 tasks.
Yeah, I'd rather work on one task that I know is going to make a difference and a positive impact rather than just 10 little small tasks. And not to say that just, module updates or something obviously need to be done, but yeah, I'd rather be focusing on the things that are providing value. But yeah, especially if that's something I'm aligned with and agree with, and yeah, if I'm all in on it as well, I'd rather be, I want to see that project succeed then as well. But I think the other thing you said about there, I think it's knowing why we're doing the change, but then it's also knowing that what we did what we were supposed to do, like having analytics or metrics or something. Very often I've worked in situations where, I don't know, we want to move this button here because we think it's going to increase conversion rates or something. And if you're lucky, you know that, but you might just get a ticket that just says, move the button. And you're like, why? Or we're going to make everything rounder or something. It's just things I'm thinking of. So that A, you don't know why you're doing it, then you might think of a different solution that might work just as well or might be quicker or so or something. But
Yeah,
then,
or bring more impact basically when you know why you're doing this. So
indeed.
when you know
But then,
why you're changing the color of the button, you may say, "Hey, actually, this is something you may want to A/B test because remember last month you tested something with your hypothesis on another page and that increased the value by 20%. Let's do the same here instead of changing the color or the label of the button. Let's do the A/B testing again." And that may be a brilliant idea, but you wouldn't know this if you're not part of the decision-making process. At least that process is not being exposed to you. You don't see the impact of what you're doing.
yeah. And then it's like, assuming that is what we're doing and we've moved the button, how do we know that it has actually increased conversions? And to know that, if I've done that thing and it has bumped things up by 10% or whatever that the metric is, to know that what I did worked instead of it just being like, now we're on to the next ticket and we'll never talk about that one again. To be able to sort of close the loop, I think, is really important. And yet again, that's just a really motivating factor.
It is very, very motivating knowing that you've made an impact, seeing the evidence of that. And I think it's also important part of the culture generally is to celebrate achievements, even small achievements. And certainly the milestones when you've increased the conversion rate by 10, 20, 30, 50%. Well, incredible. That's a great job of the whole team. It's definitely something that's worth celebrating, not just personally to feel good about it, but to celebrate this as a team, I find it quite important.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. We've covered a few things from your talk. Is there anything else that you wanted us to talk about before we start wrapping up? Just keep an eye on the time.
That's a great question. I remember that I was also talking about people who identify as divas, who we usually identify Divas. I don't know if you want to get into that topic or is it too.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think I remember a comment that said about divas can't be lead developers or something to that effect. I remember right. That one took a bit of a call to me, I remember at the time.
Well, indeed. I mean, just to make sure that everybody is on the same page who Diva is, I would classify it as someone who largely outweighs their importance for the company and believe they are always right and tend to dismiss others' opinions. I'm sure I might have reminded of someone to anyone listening to this definition. So
Hopefully,
basically,
not me.
no, it's not you. Everybody enjoys working with Yoli, but there are people who know a lot, but they're very difficult characters. And in the team, we had this in the past, in many companies I've worked with. If your team spends a lot of the time talking about someone doing something wrong, a lot of the time, it takes the energy away from the company. It is absolutely not possible to build any healthy culture and healthy relationships. Because that person would always be like unhappy, will find something to be unhappy about, and will make unhappy other people. It kind of ruins the whole vibe, if you want, of growth and respect within the team. So my point was that if you have a luxury to avoid divas, that's incredible. Don't try to change them. It never works. It's better to let those people go if you have this luxury. If you don't, for example, sometimes you really get to may have a lot of work and you need to hire someone temporary at least to fulfill the work. It is fine to hire divas for a very temporary piece of work to get the job done, as long as you know not to include them too much into the not to expose them too much into the team to make sure that they can get the job done without ruining what the culture that you've built. And my main point there was also speaking about the lead developers. When companies they ignore the personal character and the cultural aspects, and they value only engineering skills, those divas may easily become lead developers, may even become part of the management leadership team, like CTOs. And in this case, there's no way the company will ever build a healthy culture within the team, because they can't bring the healthy and respectful culture. Nice culture into the company. They're all about blaming people quite often and suppressing people's opinions. Nobody wants to work on this culture. People would work just for money. Again, 5, 10 tasks a month. That's going to be the limit of the person, every engineer under such leadership. So, as a conclusion here, for speaking about divas, lead developers never, ever, ever. And only for short-term contract, if you really have to get the job done very quickly, like really need to.
Two things that I think just spring to mind there. One, I think this is a Reddit post or a media post somewhere about, we fired our top developer. It was the best decision we ever made because they, kept a lot of that knowledge to themselves and didn't share and everything. I'll have to find it, but I'm sure I remember seeing or reading that some time ago.
Yeah, there have
And
been.
like, no, go on. Do you want to say
Sorry, I interrupted
something?
you. I
That's fine.
mean, there are plenty of things which can go wrong with such people, unfortunately. You never know. But the key indicator is if people talk a lot about someone, complaining about somebody's actions, behaviors, cannot understand what's going on, why it's going on, and there's always unpleasant surprises from time to time from that person, like that is your diva.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to think that I've always in sort of software development, you might start off as a software developer or a junior developer, and then potentially progress up to senior or lead, or again, like there's no sort of standard job titles in the industry. But once you get to a certain point, there's almost an expectation to progress. You've got to move into like a management role or a lead role, and just because you might be a really good developer. That's not maybe not necessarily a diva, but just to say that then to progress, you need to transition to a management or a lead developer. I think it's a different set of skills that you need to
Yes.
have to do that. So, yeah, that's, you might be the technically best person, but that doesn't mean that you're the best to sort of lead the team or to grow the culture.
Absolutely. And for example, at System Seed, we promote people with better consulting skills, better mentorship skills to lead developers. And some really great developers can be in hierarchy, even though we don't have a hierarchy, but like sort of a project hierarchy under people with better consulting and like mentorship skills, because that is more important for the team than knowing how to write a component in React better, those kind of things.
And particularly if you're in a smaller team and having as much contact with clients and stakeholders as you said earlier, you need that those sort of skills, and I say soft skills, but you need those sort of personal skills as well. Yeah, not just the technical code writing stuff.
Yeah, it is leadership and management skills more than seniority of the technical skills, how well you can write a certain part of the code or a script or something. It's less relevant, less important for the leadership role. And when people who promote developers don't realize that, well, that's a very big mistake to make, a very expensive mistake to make.
I guess finally, then, was there anything from the talk that you gave, either from feedback afterwards or from the polls that we were doing during the talk? Was there one big thing that sort of jumped out at you for doing that, or
That's a great
anything you were
question.
surprised by?
I gotta rewatch the recording of the talk. I certainly was surprised to learn that a lot of people who came to the conference, to the Drupal Camp England in Cambridge, when I poll them around their culture within their companies of open source community contributions, less than a third, if I remember correctly, said that their companies are doing that. And that is the most active people within the community. Because they were they came to the event. So it means that they care about the community, they care about open source, but their companies are not doing that. Less than a third of the audience are doing that.
Yeah, there was definitely
That's not
one that
that.
was quite a low number. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was that one that you mentioned it.
That was highlight, like something is definitely going wrong there.
I've
Give it
quite.
one more thought than that, but I would be very curious to explore why it is like that.
I've quite strong opinions around, if you're working for an agency or a company that is built on open source, that you should be contributing back, whether that's just code and patches and pull requests, but also events and or speaking at events, or organizing or sponsoring events, or everything else. And if your company is fundamentally based on that, I think there's also an obligation to do that. And yeah, I understand that there's not always, typically I've seen where you be on a project and they might be willing to contribute this module back at the end, but the end never happens because you're on to the next project already. So yeah, I like to do sort of contrib first workflow where I'll just open source it from day one and then pull it in. But that's always been the best approach I've found. But yeah, it
Yeah.
needs that. Yeah, because I know some companies can be quite funny about people sort of open sourcing things that they've written for projects. But again, that's a culture thing, isn't it? That you need to be able to
Yes.
give and contribute some back to the community that you've based your business on in a lot of cases.
Yeah, indeed. For me, it was surprising because community is an endless source of inspiration and motivation. It's not just about doing something good. It's also about getting inspiration, being inspired, and inspiring others. It is very rewarding mentally and very beneficial. It's always win-win when you contribute. I've never seen it that it was
Free
something
code
that
review.
Yeah, free code review. You can learn to do to give code reviews. Because if you're doing something wrong, somebody smart from the community will tell you, "Hey, you should have followed this like, co code of conduct, or this is best practice of re reviewing." You're learning through the community, and then when you meet people, when you run events, join events, endless, absolutely endless source of motivation and energy. So everybody's winning here. And you do something right.
Yeah, I've always thought about trying to get, 20% times or some time aside for developers or people to contribute to work on. But I've always felt like, if you've got people, let's say, who are good at React and, with the Drupal Experience Builder for just to think of an example, give them time to contribute back to that, and that will make the thing better for everybody. And then when you're next pitching for a pro or tendering for a project, you can be, hey, we've got a guy who worked on that, and they'll have direct knowledge to feed back from what they've learned from that, then bring that back into their project. So yeah, I'm surprised more people don't fundamentally, agencies are there to make money and to make profit, but I think it's part of the core culture. Again, or company values to give back and to make time for doing that.
For sure. And you also, you never know how your contribution will, what's the impact it will make, and how, what kind of reward you will get back as well. I'll give you an example. It was an interesting finding when I was exposed to one of the UK governmental projects on like Gov UK. I realized that the old Drupal 7 project used two or three of my contributed modules that I contributed like more than 10 years ago. I was like, wow, Gov UK is running my code. But it was very
I've seen that
nice.
with like overrided options module, and I've seen ones based on the Tailwind CSS starter kit and some others, and it's like, hey, you're using my thing, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty interesting experience. When you think of it.
Yeah, definitely. And if it's obviously there making the project better or serving some sort of function, then yeah, it makes good that I'm scared sometimes. Like, how many people use this module or whatever the case is, or this library? And yeah, it just make you go like, yeah, it's like, wow, how did we get here sometimes? But
Yeah, indeed.
there, no, it's good to know we're putting good things out into the world.
Sure.
Cool. This has been a really good, I think, interesting conversation. I'll put the link to the video that's on Drupal Camp England YouTube in the page in the on the episode notes. If people want to get in touch with you and ask any maybe follow-up questions or anything, where can they do that? What's the best place?
Can I do this on LinkedIn? I think is the best place for sort of follow-ups and communications and again professional activity as well.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for coming, really. It was a very interesting experience. It's the first time I'm ever on podcasts. I'm sure next time I will be better and better every time because I'm learning how things are while going through the motions. But it was a very interesting experience, and thanks for being the first podcast host.
Yeah, it's good to dig a bit deeper into some of the parts of your talk and pick your brain to pick a term. Interesting term. But yeah, thank you for joining me, and thanks everybody for listening to the Beyond Box podcast. I'm Oliver Davis.